It's Monday, May 13th. I'm Travell Anderson.
And I'm Josie Duffy Rice. And this is What a Day, where we are encouraging everyone to remain calm in the face of a potential sriracha shortage.
Yes, the company that makes the beloved hot sauce said it's halting production until September because its pepper supply is too green.
That does not mean that anyone should start panic buying or fighting in the hot sauce aisle.
It's not that serious.
It's not that serious.
Just choose another hot sauce.
On today's show, Israel continues to move into Rafah, plus college graduation saw protests over the weekend.
But first, Wednesday is the new decision day for a lot of high school seniors looking to go to college. Now, traditionally, students have to decide where they're going to school by May 1st. But hundreds of schools and universities pushed their deadline back this year to May 15th or even into June because of problems with the federal financial aid application called the FAFSA.
Yeah, that term brings back very stressful memories. And I know, honestly, it's even more stressful now, right? Because the problems with the FAFSA have been going on for a while now. So Can you give us a little bit of the history here?
So it all started way back in late December when the Department of Education rolled out its new version of the FAFSA. It was supposed to be easier for students and their families to navigate, but it was 3 months late. People usually start filling it out in early October, and there were just so many problems with it. Some students reported issues filling out the form and fixing errors. The Department of Ed had to fix a math issue that left some families qualifying for less aid than they were entitled to. Then there was a glitch that blocked students with undocumented parents from completing their applications. And those delays just created more knock-on effects. Because of all the problems, the government couldn't send FAFSA information to colleges on time, and so colleges couldn't send prospective students any aid offers. The head of the Federal Student Aid Office resigned over the whole mess, but even now, some students are still in the dark about where or even if they'll go to college with little time left to decide. So to get a better sense of where this FAFSA fiasco has left students, I spoke with Ellie Brucker. She's the Director of Research at the Institute for College Access and Success. They're a nonprofit that aims to make higher education more affordable and available. And I started by asking her about all the ways this year's college acceptance cycle looks different from previous years.
We are in a scenario now where most students, I think, haven't made a decision. Lots of students haven't received financial aid packages yet from all of the colleges that they've been admitted to. And plenty of students haven't decided yet whether they're going to college because of everything that's been going on with the FAFSA. So it really hasn't been a decision day for the majority of students, I think.
As you just mentioned, one of the most recent issues has been that many students are still waiting to hear from colleges about how much aid they will receive. Where are schools on that? How have they responded in this moment?
Financial aid offices are working their tails off right now. They have received financial information on their students far later in the process than they have in the past. And they're working overtime trying to get these letters to students as much as possible. Most of the smaller schools who have fewer resources, I think, in their financial aid offices have pushed those dates back to give themselves some more time, to give students more time. But right now, we don't really have a good sense of how many students have gotten financial aid packages from how many schools. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of still feels like most schools, most students are still in kind of a holding pattern waiting on that information.
Yeah, and there's some recent data from the National College Attainment Network that says that the number of high school students who've so far completed the FAFSA this year has plunged nearly 25% compared to last year. Can you put that number into context for us? Like, what does a drop like that mean?
I remember in the height of the pandemic, high schools closed down, students went to going to school virtually. Mm-hmm. We saw a pretty substantial drop in FAFSA completions at that time that everybody kind of in the field was really concerned about. This is so much bigger than that. What's most troubling to me, too, is the pattern we're seeing in where those declines are happening. The schools who are serving more higher income students are actually catching up faster. So 43% of students in schools that serve fewer low income students have completed a FAFSA, but that's only 36% in schools that serve higher proportions of low income students. And obviously, lower income students are the ones who are going to be eligible for more financial aid, who are going to rely on that more to pay for college. So that pattern, I think, is perspective that I think is really important here. But looking at where the decline is, who is being most affected by that, really has me concerned.
Absolutely. And how much longer do prospective students have to fill out the FAFSA?
So technically, students can fill out the FAFSA like a few months into their freshman year of college. They can be enrolled, but that tuition bill is going to come due before that, right? So if students want to be able to pay their tuition bill on time, they're going to need to apply before that comes due. Most of those are going to be August, September. I think for a lot of students, the deadline is a little fuzzy there.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier that some schools wanted to, you know, help out students, so they pushed back deadlines. But others, you know, like the Ivy League schools, for example, did not push back their decision days. I know you were a first-generation college student like myself. Mm-hmm. You also were a Pell Grant recipient. If you were a student now, still waiting to hear how much financial aid you qualified for, how would that have shaped the decisions that you had to make at that time?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that would have been an impossible situation because the decision that I was making was what was going to be the most affordable for me. Students who are in a situation where maybe they've received a financial aid package from one institution, but not from another. They've been admitted to two. They're choosing between some of these institutions. And so they have to run the risk of, should I take this deal? The students who I think had still been maybe on the fence about whether to go to college at all. Mm-hmm. Not having that information at this point, I'm sure, is pushing some students to think like, I'll put this off. Maybe I'll think about it next year. And we know very often those students don't end up thinking about it next year and don't come back into that pipeline.
Listen, yeah, I also was one of those students who my college choice was based on who gave me the most money. Mm-hmm. It was that simple for me. And you mentioned that folks have been saying, you know, put down a deposit, a tuition deposit, and hope that financial aid will kick in later. But what are the risks, right, that people face doing that? Especially given, you know, college is not cheap these days. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
We know that students underestimate how much financial aid they're going to get, and they overestimate the cost of college. And so I do really worry about students perhaps picking the college with the lower sticker price in this situation where they're waiting on a financial aid package. They're looking at, okay, well, what does the internet say that this college costs? Not necessarily what is it going to cost me, but what does it say it costs?
Yeah.
They might opt to go for the one that appears to be cheaper. But a lot of times, some of the more selective institutions, institutions with big endowments, they have the ability to provide more financial aid. So sometimes a more selective college can actually end up being less expensive to a student.
Absolutely.
And so I worry about students right now not picking the college that would really truly be the best fit for them because they don't want to take the risk of something costing more than they can afford.
So beyond extending their decision deadlines, what else are schools doing to help prospective students navigate, you know, these issues?
We have seen some states, I think states maybe more than institutions, really put everything into this. They're trying to reach students who haven't completed yet in schools. I know some have been providing data to high school counselors so that they can reach out to students that they know have not completed yet, say, hey, how can I support you to get this done? But I think this has to be kind of an all hands on deck situation, institutions, high schools, state governments, federal government. And I think we haven't necessarily seen that full push everywhere. It should have been all hands on deck 6 months ago.
What more could federal officials be doing to make sure that young folks are filling out the FAFSA?
At this point, I'm not sure it's a matter of what they could do more. I think looking back, there are things I would have liked maybe for them to do earlier in the process to Absolutely. Communicate around some of this a little better. But I think right now the department is doing all it can to support states, to support institutions. We do think that financial aid offices, particularly financial aid offices at small colleges, at colleges that are underfunded, they could probably use additional support from the department. At this point, it's almost, I hate to say that it's a little bit too late, but there is not a lot that we can do at this point, but keep pushing, trying to get students to get this done and to complete.
Yeah, for my last question, I want to just step out just a little bit, right? Because it's not just the mess around the FAFSA that is weighing on this college admission cycle. There's the Supreme Court last year that ended affirmative action. We've been seeing campus protests over the war in Gaza that I'm sure is stressing out some prospective students. Taking all of that together, what more do you think colleges can be doing to help, you know, the incoming class once they arrive on campus?
I think reassuring students maybe by reaching out, especially to students who perhaps don't have networks on campus, who don't have family member or, you know, a trusted friend who can tell them kind of how all this works. I think reaching out to those students and making sure, you know, that they're doing okay, particularly for students of color at predominantly white institutions, making sure that they have connections. And I think beyond what institutions can do, I think just generally states, the federal government, we need to invest more in higher education. Something I've been trying to bring up is, even if all of this had been done correctly, if there were no delays, no hiccups in the implementation of the FAFSA, the reality is that most low-income students still are not getting enough financial aid to get through college without massive student loan debt. Mm-hmm. So even if completing a FAFSA this year had been smooth sailing, we still really need to make a lot more progress in making sure financial aid is sufficient to pay for college. There's so many other stressors happening here. To add to that, that students know while they're in school, their debt is climbing. We really need to talk about how we ease the burden of paying for college, so that students have, you know, emotional capacity and energy left to deal with everything else that they're going to have to deal with.
That was my conversation with Ellie Brucker of the Institute for College Access and Success. That's the latest for now. We'll get to some headlines in a moment, but if you like our show, tell somebody about it. Subscribe, share it with your friends. We'll be back after some ads.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
Israeli forces continue to advance in the southern Gaza city of Rafah on Sunday in what they say is a pursuit to eliminate Hamas. But according to the New York Times, American intelligence officials say neither Hamas's top leader, nor any leaders for that matter, are hiding in the city. The U.S. says Israel agrees, and the two countries' spy agencies have reason to believe that Hamas leaders are still in the tunnel system beneath the closest city to the north, Khan Yunis. The U.S. hopes the information will prevent the Israeli Defense Forces from launching a major ground invasion on Rafah. At the beginning of May, there were 1 million refugees sheltering in Rafah, but the UN said Sunday that it believes more than 300,000 have fled the city over the past week. On Meet the Press on Sunday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken declined to identify a red line for Israel and expressed concern about the refugee situation in Gaza.
Absent a credible plan to get them out of harm's way and to support them, the president's been clear for some time that we couldn't and would not support a major military operation in Rafah.
Following a month in which U.S. college campuses were roiled by protests, students walked out of multiple commencement speeches over the weekend. About 100 of 1,200 Virginia Commonwealth University graduates left in the middle of an address by the state's governor, Glenn Youngkin. Earlier in the week, the school's chapter of the Virginia NAACP had asked administrators to cancel Youngkin's speech over objections to the governor's stances on teaching about LGBTQ plus issues, race, and more. Student protesters outside of the ceremony also carried signs and chanted in support of Palestinian rights. In North Carolina, dozens of Duke University students walked out of a commencement ceremony fronted by comedian Jerry Seinfeld, with some chanting Free Palestine as they exited. Seinfeld has been a vocal advocate for Israel during its military incursion into Gaza following the October 7th attacks by Hamas. And at University of Southern California, a show of support for the student whose valedictory speech was canceled over unspecified safety concerns. Asna Tabassum got a standing ovation upon receiving her degree.
Asna will graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Biomedical Engineering, Molecular and Cellular Engineering, and a minor in Resistance to Genocide.
Beautiful.
Shout out to her.
I know. Jury selection is set to begin today in the criminal corruption trial of New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, who is responsible for reminding us all that gold bars are still a thing. Menendez faces 16 felony charges for allegedly using his position of power to assist two foreign governments and three New Jersey businessmen in exchange for gold, almost $500,000 in cash, a Mercedes-Benz, and more. He will be tried in Manhattan federal court. Menendez's wife faces similar charges, but is being tried separately from him at her request. This will be Menendez's second corruption trial in a decade. The first was in 2017 and ended in a mistrial. The senator maintains his innocence and has not yet ruled out an independent run for his long-held Senate seat in November, though he has said he will not campaign as a Democrat.
Richard Rick Slayman, the first person to receive a kidney transplant from a pig, has died. Slayman had a human kidney transplant in 2018 after living with diabetes and high blood pressure for years. He eventually had to go back on dialysis a few years after the transplant, and 2 months ago, he received the pig kidney transplant. And when the procedure was successful, doctors believed it would give Slayman more years to live. Massachusetts General Hospital, the hospital that performed the transplant, said there is no indication that the pig kidney was the cause of Slayman's death. Slayman's family also put out a statement thanking doctors for giving them a little more time with him. He was 62 years old.
Singer, dancer, producer Shakira has become even more of a multi-hyphenate. She is also now a person who is not guilty of tax evasion. That's because last week, investigators in Spain said they lacked the evidence to prove Shakira used tax havens and shell companies to hold on to 6.6 million euros she owed the country in 2018. The court agreed that Shakira had made no, quote, intent to defraud the Spanish government. This tax trial wasn't the first time Shakira has had problems with Spain's version of a Form 1040. Earlier this year, she was facing a potential 8-year jail sentence over her 2012 and 2014 taxes, but was able to resolve the situation by paying a 7.8 million euro fine.
Listen, her hips don't lie, and neither does her accountant, I guess.
At least not that they can prove.
And you know what? That's all that matters.
That's how it sounds to me. I don't know what's lying, but they can't prove anything. And those are the headlines.
One more thing before we go. Crooked loves supporting the non-binary community and a little wordplay. So, of course, there's a new t-shirt in the Crooked store that does both. It reads, "They, Them's the Rules." It's been a highly requested merch item, and now it's finally here. Head to crooked.com/store to get yours. That is all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, don't lie with your hips or with your accountant, and tell your friends to listen.
And if you are into reading and not just Shakira's tax returns like me, What a Day is also a nightly newsletter, so check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Josie Duffy Rice.
I'm Trayvell Anderson. And ration your sriracha.
Now is a great time to learn about other hot sauces.
Texas Pete, Crystal's Hot Sauce,
yeah.
Louisiana.
There's a lot out there for you.
Chapatulo. Ain't there one called Chapatulo or something like that?
I don't think that's the name, but I do know exactly what you're talking about.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do.
What a Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Natalie Bettendorf. We had production help today from Michelle Aloy, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our showrunner is Erica Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.